Thank you so much for joining us on the stream at WGNRadio.com or listening wherever your favorite stream is sold.
Right. Hello, everyone in Montana. It's next to a stream and enjoying the program.
Gone
fly fishing. Yep.
All right, that crazy laugh is a crazy guy who has been on the show before. We've known you a very long time. I have, for sure. Craig Gass is here. You will be appearing at Dirty Nelly's in Palatine this Saturday. Two shows. I saw you last time you were at Dirty Nelly's.
Yeah, it was last year, and this year I'm doing a Cubs-themed comedy show. I've always had a weak spot for the Cubs.
You're not from here, though.
I'm from New York. My birthright was the Yankees. I grew up 10 miles from Yankee Stadium in Mount Vernon, New York. And I was a big Yankee fan until I got to the age where I realized, it's not magic. I really thought it was magic. Like, the Yankees just kick ass every year. I think you should only root for the Yankees up until the age of 12, maybe 13. And then when you know what's going on, you shouldn't be a grown man rooting. I mean, I don't.
But a lot of kids would want to root for a proven winner. The Yankees were a perennial winner. Cubs, the opposite.
No question. When I was a kid, I remember getting into football and saying, well, who's the best team? The Steelers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm a Steelers fan. That's mm-hmm. my team because they're the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get to that age, plus, I had an experience of going to Yankee Stadium. I was 7 years old. I'm with my mom and dad. And I remember looking around the stadium and looking at my parents and going, this stadium is loaded with a-holes. I was seven.
Yeah.
I was seven. I saw fights
yeah.
in the stands. Like, if you wore a hat for another team, people would
they get a little aggressive.
Yeah. And yeah. It was,
really?
Yeah.
They're awful. And then in 1987, I go to Wrigley for the first time, and I was shocked. I used to watch the team on WGN, and then I go to the stadium, and I'm like, the stadium is packed. This team
sure.
sucks.
Right.
Like, I couldn't believe it. And I was so enamored with it. And
but Craig, you know, I hope you know this, being from another city, the belief was that it didn't matter if the Cubs would win or lose. Wrigley Field would be jam-packed. And because of that, the Cubs would never provide a winner because they didn't need to.
They didn't need to.
Right.
And I've actually heard from friends of mine in the local media. I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I've heard from friends of mine in the local media out here that of all the sports teams, the Cubs are the toughest team to get access to because they know they don't necessarily
need it.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
They
don't necessarily
don't.
Need it. And so I've always said my whole life that I'll only go to the World Series if the Chicago Cubs go to the World Series, to which all my friends have always said, well, then you're never going to the World Series.
Right.
And they got in and
they did? No one told me.
Wendy, it was in the paper.
I got tickets for game 6 and 7.
Oh.
I'm texting friends of mine in Cleveland. Hey, are you going? Are you going? And a buddy of mine who owns some really popular local restaurants in Cleveland called The Melt. It's like a grilled cheese sandwich restaurant.
Oh, yum.
He says, he goes, yeah, dude, I'm in the third row, and I'm sitting right behind John Cusack and Eddie Vedder. And I said, okay, well, if you want to hang out, let me know. And he said, you won't be able to get to me because I'm behind a huge wall of security here.
Yeah.
And I said, all right. And so I meet up with other friends. I'm walking around the stadium, and a guy in the stadium who works for the Indians stops me and goes, hey, weren't you on That Metal Show? And I was like, what? Oh my, of all the TV stuff, I was like, yeah, are you a metalhead? He goes, yeah. And so I'm talking to him. And while he's talking to me, he has to stop to scan tickets for people. And he goes, hold on 1 second here. Yep, you're good. Let me give you a wristband. But yeah, anyways, and he keeps talking to me and stopping periodically to go, oh, I'm sorry, let me just scan this.
Yeah.
Yep, here's your wristband. And I go, what's the wristband for? And he goes, it's a private club behind home plate called the Home Run Club. Do you want one? And I said, yeah. And he gave me a wristband, and I was like, do you mind if I just go right now? And he goes, oh, go have fun. And I go behind home plate, and I text my buddy again and said, dude, I'm about 10 rows behind you right now in this private club. He texts me in the seventh inning, says one of the wives just left in the third row. She brought her baby without any ear protection.
Oh.
And he said, one of the wives just left. There's an empty seat 3 seats over for me. So I go and I sit 3 seats down and ride that wave until the 10th inning through the rain delay.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is amazing. I'm sitting directly behind John Cusack.
Yeah.
And Eddie Vedder is directly in front of him. And I thought, I'm going to do the coolest Facebook Live ever. I'm going to do a broadcast of the Cubs winning the World Series with all these cool people in it. And my Facebook Live starts to count down. 3, 2, 1, you're live. And I feel somebody leaning on me, and I turn around. It's Bill Murray.
Really?
He's drunk and crying.
Yeah.
Wendy's pulling up the video right now.
You can
it's
look
1
it,
minute and 15 seconds in when you get
nice
the
seats.
And I'm looking at Bill Murray. We're one out away from winning the World Series.
Yeah.
And there's so many things I wanted to say to Bill Murray. I just wanted to go, I love you.
Yeah,
right. I love you.
Yeah.
But all I could say was, Bill, hold on. They almost got this. Hold on. I get the last out. Boom! And I turn around, Bill! And it's 5 minutes of me high-fiving Bill and him crying.
Yeah.
And I didn't see this before.
And my phone is exploding with text messages from friends saying, get off my TV, you loser! The image of Bill Murray and I is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing a Mariners hat.
Oh, no.
I'm that guy. But everyone is wondering, like, how'd you end up at the game with Bill Murray? And I said, I didn't. He showed up right as they won. And the video ends up being Bill and Eddie Vedder and Chris Chelios, Barney Hunt, Cubs ownership.
The Chicago contingent
Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
They're all swarming around me. And these aren't my seats. They're not my seats. And I'm filming everybody. And a half hour goes by. My buddy from Cleveland texts me and goes, dude, sorry I didn't say goodbye, man. That game sucked. I couldn't believe it, man. I just was so close, man. I just was pissed. I had to leave. And I said, dude, I didn't even know you left. Bill Murray showed up.
Right.
Missed it. Bill Murray hung out for like a half hour. And he writes me back and says, screw Bill Murray. And I was who says screw Bill
so
Murray?
A moment that was already as surrealistic as a moment could be, the Cubs winning the World Series, became even crazier with the addition of those guys being around you.
Yeah, I mean, it is the coolest. She's watching
like
it,
Mr. Chicago, man. I swear to God.
She's watching the video. You got to just share it on whatever pages you
got. Yeah, we'll put Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
Because it's insane. It is, I mean, I'm a foot in front of Bill Murray.
Looks like less than that.
And yeah, I mean, we're just, well, he's standing, he's leaning on me when the video starts. So when I turn around, his face is right there.
Did you see what he did after the game?
He
got into the Cubs locker room and he stole a Fox, you know, they've got the microphone with the Fox logo on it.
Yeah.
He stole it from a legitimate sports guy and he went around the Cubs locker room doing interviews as though he was a member of Fox Sports.
And he was better than maybe the other interviews would have done.
He did a great job.
I love it. And it's not my birthright, but I've always had a soft spot for the Cubs. I've always had a soft spot for any underdog.
Yeah.
And
well, they're the
nothing.
Ultimate underdog.
They're the ultimate underdog. And when I was doing interviews in Cleveland that day, everyone was asking, well, who do you want to win? And I was like, hey, whoever.
Right, whoever wanted, does want.
And the truth was, if Cleveland won, it would be great for Cleveland. But
sure.
You cannot argue
the
Cubs. You can't argue that. That was, I remember the first time I stood on stage in St. Louis, I had a Mark Grace jersey.
Yeah.
And people started booing
me.
And I had no idea there was a rivalry.
Yeah.
And then my show goes from comedy to spoken word because I have to explain to people, wait a minute, why are you mad at the Cubs? Who have the Cubs ever heard?
Right.
And they're like, oh, they suck. And I was like, that's why you need to root for them, because they suck. Why are you? Their colors are red, white, and blue. How much more obvious does it need to be? That's an American team. You have to root for that team. So, it was magic. So the comedy show this weekend, I have a couple comedians who are big Cubs fans. The whole show in Palatine is going to be...
Are they Chicago guys or guys from elsewhere?
Local guys.
Cool. Can you name names?
Well, there's one or two I really want to get in there, and I don't want to say who they are.
All right, that's fine.
But it's going to be a comedy show for Cubs fans by Cubs fans. And we're doing it again in this rock club in Dirty Nellies. And I'm a big sports nut. I book all my shows around the country.
Yeah.
Around baseball games, football games, and concerts.
Oh, that's great.
If it's a National League city, I won't perform there unless it's the week that the Cubs are there.
Yeah.
If it's an American League city, it's got to be when the Mariners are there.
What a nice life to be able to plan around your fandom.
Yeah, that is
And
nice.
The only downside is I'm not famous.
So oh, well, there's always a
downside. Because I focused on having fun.
Right.
But it's weird because as a comedian, I hang out with other comedians, and there's some who really admire, and I'm cool around those guys. I'm cool around musicians because a lot of musicians come out to comedy shows. I'm cool around actors that I work with on TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about athletes that, especially football for me, because I get so emotionally invested that I lose my cool. And, I think I told you the story about my quarterback that nobody cares about, Matt Hasselbeck, that I met him. Did I tell you that?
I don't
recall. Tell us, no.
I met Matt Hasselbeck, who was the quarterback for my team. He was the guy who turned my team around. And I saw him at an event, and I freaked out, and I just I couldn't control Matt. And I go, hey man, and he goes, he turned around, looks at me, and he goes, hey, he goes, what's up? And I go, what's up? My voice got that high, and then I realized, oh my God, I have a camera phone, Matt, real quick, come on, we just take it real quick,
yeah.
And we take the picture, and I'm squeezing him.
Why not?
You don't want to let him go.
And he's a foot taller than me, yeah. So I'm squeezing him and looking up going, ha, 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 ha. He takes the picture and goes, all right, I'll see you later. And he walks away. And I'm standing in this hallway watching him walk away going, Matt, there's something about meeting somebody who you really admire where you want to stretch out a moment that is clearly over. I said, can I get a picture? He said, fine. He's taking the picture. Now he wants to get on with his life, but I want more out of this.
Sure,
so
of course.
As he's walking away, I went, Matt! And when he turned around, I put my hand out and I was like, come on.
One more.
Just shake. Because I just thought, if we shake hands, then we'll start talking.
Yeah.
Right?
We become best friends.
If we start talking, maybe you'll teach me how to throw a spiral. I don't know. I wasn't thinking, but I know that shaking hands is the beginning of
step
a
friendship.
You're
that's
so
step
cute.
One.
That's step one.
You're like a 10-year-old boy.
And Matt Hasselbeck reluctantly turns around and goes, all right, what's up? And he starts walking towards me. And I was like, oh my God, here we go. Here we go. And these are the only words that came out of my mouth. I went, you make me so happy. And he goes, what? And I go,
oh no.
Thank you. And I walked away.
Wow.
That was it. And I spent 10 years on sports stations all over the world, analyzing why that was the only thing that came out of my mouth was, you make me so happy. Mm-hmm. But I talked about it every week, market by market, sports stations, about how I lost my cool with Matt Hasselbeck. 4 years ago, I'm broadcasting from the Super Bowl Media Center in New Orleans.
Yeah.
When Matt Hasselbeck starts walking through the Super Bowl Media Center, and I go, oh my God, Matt?
Yeah.
Didn't want to bother you at all. Just want to say hello. I'm a big fan. And I go,
you didn't say I'm the guy who you make happy.
No.
Throw that
I just said, I don't want to bother you. I just want to shake your hand and say hello. And he goes, Craig Gass.
He remembered.
Shut the hell up. He goes, you're the guy with the story, right?
Right.
Hold on a second. Brett, come here. Brett, come here. No, come here. I look over. Brett Favre starts walking towards me in slow motion, and Matt Hasselbeck goes, Brett, this is Craig Gass. This is one of the funniest comedians on the planet. And Brett Favre walks up and goes, what's up, dude?
Uh-huh.
I love stand-up comedy. And I went, I do too! And I started crying. I started crying to Brett Favre and Matt Hasselbeck. At one point, Matt Hasselbeck goes, this guy does great impressions. He works on Family Guy. He does, well, here, Craig, do some impressions for Brett. And every impression I did was of somebody crying.
Oh,
every impression was like, I want to... Can I get a picture? Okay, Jason, here. I take the picture. The next day, I wake up in my hotel room in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Log onto my Twitter. Matt Hasselbeck is following me on Twitter. And I was freaking out. I call my friend. I go, Jason, get in here. Look at this. And he's looking at my computer going, what? What am I looking at? Twitter. So what? Matt Hasselbeck. Is Matt Hasselbeck following me? I go, Matt Hasselbeck's following me on Twitter. And he goes, you should tweet him. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I should. No, I'll post the picture. I'll post the picture. He'll love the picture. And that's where this whole story just
that's fantastic.
Takes a huge dump because I saw the picture, and you can see it. It's on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's in my profile pictures. Go to Facebook.com/ILoveGass with two S's and go to my profile pictures, and you'll see Brett Favre smiling. Matt Hasselbeck. Smiling.
Yeah.
Me in the middle.
Crying. Sure.
And I made the mistake of writing a caption while I was in an emotional state looking at the picture.
Yeah.
And the caption I wrote was, I'm sorry. Okay? I'm sorry. But when one of your heroes introduces you to Brett Favre with the words, "This is one of the funniest comedians on the planet," you know what time it is. Hashtag, it's boner time. And within an hour, literally within 1 hour, Matt Hasselbeck unfollowed me. I was like, oh.
Dude.
He went too far.
I went too far. And it's, far. You know, it's dreams really do come true. I've seen it.
Yeah.
You just,
and they crash and burn.
You can't mess them up.
Oh.
So, but yeah, as a huge sports fan, that's Saturday night is a, it's not just a sports themed show. It's a Cubs themed show. And
good.
Inviting a bunch of guys from the front office for the Cubs to come out for that late show there. And that club, Dirty Nellies, is like a perfect venue to do stand-up.
It's one of the first places I ever worked when I did stand-up.
Really?
A thousand years ago. But I think they've moved locations. They're still in Palatine. I think they moved across the street or down the street. But, yeah, it was always a fun place to work.
They would do a regular show there? A regular comedy
show? No, they would do, like, every once in a while, they do a special comedy night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who were the guys that were starting out with you out here in Chicago when you started out?
It might not be names that you're familiar with.
Okay.
You know, most of them either stayed in Chicago or went on, but I don't know if you were in another city then, they're probably names that you wouldn't recognize.
Okay. I'm always interested in, I mean, I love, as a stand-up comedian, just sharing stories about, my favorite thing about being able to do stand-up comedy is the countless hours of conversations I've had analyzing stand-up.
Sure.
You know, and I actually just heard one of my favorite bombing stories ever. There's a club we all used to work at in New York when I first got to New York in 1998, and Dane Cook had a story about bombing at this club that he said it was a Tuesday night. I think he said it was 1 o'clock in the morning. He gets on stage. There's six people in the audience.
Yeah.
One of the six people has all their groceries on the table.
Oh, jeez.
Because when you walk by, they go, "Hey, come on in, comedy show." It's like, "All right, got my groceries." "Oh, it's okay. I'll carry the groceries. Come on, I'll help you." So this guy, you know, the doorman helps him carry his groceries in. So this guy's sitting at the table with all his groceries stacked on top of his table. And Dane is bombing. Nobody's laughing. They're all kind of hammered. They're not really reacting to him. And one of the six people gets up, stumbles to the bathroom, closes the door, and starts violently vomiting in the bathroom. Wow. It's disruptive to the other five people, and they just hear awful noises. There's a long pause, and then toilet flushes. Guy comes back out. He's walking back over to his seat, and Dane Cook is standing on stage. He goes, "You okay, buddy? You all right? You feeling okay? Are you?" And the audience member, the drunk guy, goes, "Oh no, I had some bad comedy," and I was like, "Oh!" High-five each other. The guy with the groceries is like, "Ah!" He's throwing his groceries up in the air. The audience owns him.
That's terrible. There's a documentary on Netflix right now with all your favorite comedians of the past years telling their worst stories about shows they did where they just didn't do well.
Really?
Chris Rock and Seinfeld and everybody. You got to see it. It's really enjoyable. The name is escaping me. I saw it about 3 weeks ago, but it's on Netflix right now. Go through documentaries. It's all right there.
One of my favorites is Patton Oswalt has a story about when he was starting out. He was at an open mic in Virginia, or maybe he was headlining, but someone in the audience, it's not going well. It's quiet. He's going through his set, and then apparently somebody stood up in the middle of the audience and said, "I'm sorry," and the whole crowd looks over, and he goes, "You seem like a nice man. I don't think comedy is for you."
Oh, no.
And he starts giving a speech.
Oh, no.
And Patton just stares at him and lets him continue, and he goes, you seem like a good person. I just... We haven't laughed, and we're going to go.
What, he's speaking for the whole room?
He's giving a monologue. And Patton just, I love stories like that.
They're hard to hear, though, you know?
They hurt.
They do.
It's awful.
Craig Gass.
What a terrible ramp-up to say. By the way, go to Palatine's.
And laugh like crazy.
Yeah, go to Palatine. Go to Dirty Nellie's Palatine and go see Craig Gass and give him a speech in the middle of the show.
No, don't do that. Dirty Nellie's, D-U-R-T-Y, and then Nellie's, N-E-L. L-I-E-S, DirtyNellies.com. You're there. Two shows on Saturday. The 7 o'clock is all ages, for reals?
Yeah, 7 o'clock is... I recommend 18 and over, But it's Dirty Nellies with a U because I think the owner didn't finish high school. He doesn't know how to spell. I don't know what happened. But Dirty Nellies with a U. And
he's a terrible Scrabble player.
He is.
Trust me, Craig. You clean up at Scrabble.
And it's I would recommend 18 and over for that early show.
That's the 7 o'clock and then 9:30, 21 and over.
Yeah, but it's going to be a Cubs-themed comedy show.
Should be good.
And great. Check them out on Facebook and watch that video. We'll post the video up on our Facebook page, too.
The video is insane. It is that a lot of people saw the shot of Bill Murray and that there's a guy in front of him with his camera on. And that was me. I'm the guy who was talking
to him. In the Marlins
hat. I was in the
Mariners
hat.
Sorry.
In the Mariners hat, yeah.
Thank you, Craig.
All right, thank you, guys.
Have a good time.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Judy's got the news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, thank you, Judy. This is kind of disturbing news in a weird way. U.S. drops 22,000-pound bomb on ISIS caves in Afghanistan. You said it's been nicknamed the mother of all bombs.
Right. And we were getting reports that this was, because possibly a Green Beret had been killed in the area.
So it's retaliation for that.
Maybe.
Possibly.
So we had heard that first when we first heard about the dropping of the bomb. I was, Sean Spicer's talking about it now, but I missed it because I came in and he.
But Sean Spicer didn't start out by talking about the bomb.
No, he started out his daily briefing by talking about the Easter egg hunt.
Right. And then the bomb came up eventually.
Is that what you do? Is that
you would almost think
no,
you want to lead with your
no,
headline,
yes,
which was
you
the bomb.
Would always lead. I mean, when you drop a bomb,
yeah,
you are about to have a news conference. You know, minutes later, I would think that you would start with that.
Although then the Easter egg hunt seems
right.
Superfluous. It seems
then
unimportant.
No one would cover that. Maybe.
Right.
That's when you put the Easter stuff on hold, maybe, or have a second press conference, the fun press conference
right.
Later.
Right.
And wasn't he an Easter bunny there at the White House?
Yeah, Sean Spicer was.
That's why it's near and dear to his heart. He wants to get that out first.
I want to keep you folks posted on the Easter bunny news first, and then we'll get to this stuff about the bomb. Yeah.
All right. Adam Stump, a Pentagon spokesman, this according to ABC7.com, said it was the first ever combat use of the bomb. It's known as the GBU-43, which he said contains 11 tons of explosives.
That's a bunch.
And this is thought to be at this point retaliation. There's
well,
the word.
Well, I didn't hear the word retaliation, but what we heard was first a Green Beret may have been killed, and then the next thing we heard was that there was a bomb was detonated there. So
the bomb was dropped on a cave complex believed to be used by ISIS fighters in the Akin district of Nangarhar province, very close to the border with Pakistan. This is not good for me all of a sudden.
Well, think about it. If the Green Beret story part is true, then this is just an area where there was obviously some intense fighting going on.
Yeah.
Sure.
So that could have been, because I mean, and I don't know, does it say in the story whether they had planned that bombing?
No.
Because that'll be interesting to see, too, if they...
Mm-hmm.
Things happened so quickly that it was just a matter of the fighting going on there.
And this just happened within the last half hour or so,
yep.
Judy?
Yeah. Yep, last half hour, exactly.
All right, a non-nuclear bomb, I'm not up to speed on bomb making, but I don't know, I hear bomb, I automatically think
nuclear. So first
nuclear.
Of all, bomb is bad.
Yeah, yeah, that's all I hear, and I'm like, okay.
Nuclear, the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know either. Being that it's obviously nuclear would have impacted a much larger area, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know what kind of precision these bombs have or, you know, and they were caves, which I would assume are very hard to bomb or
that's why you need
infiltrate.
An 11-ton bomb.
Exactly. So well, a lot more information will be coming out today.
Well, part of his plan, President Trump, was to eradicate ISIS. He said that all throughout, that he wasn't going to tolerate ISIS anymore. He was going to get to the bottom of it and take them out. So is this step one in doing that? Is that is this part of the game plan? Or is this part one?
You're asking Judy to answer for
well,
Donald Trump?
Well, first I would start by saying I believe that it was also President Obama's goal his entire 8 years in office to eradicate ISIS.
ISIL at the time.
I think ISIL, right.
Yeah. So he still called it that, though.
ISIL. Yeah. It's just, no, it doesn't flow off the tongue like ISIS. Anyway.
Although, what better way to anger them than to call them by the wrong name?
Right. And I have to say, my son goes to Iowa, and to get on their website, I used to have to type in ISIS.
Why?
And you know, every time I did that, it pinged over at the FBI.
Yeah, exactly.
So I still do it, even though they changed
like
the name.
Like they need another reason to watch you. Why, but why did you have to put in
because
ISIS?
Because it was Illinois. It was Iowa
State.
No, because it's the University of Iowa, but it was whatever. Iowa something.
Something school?
Yeah, because that would be weird.
Did they change it eventually?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. So, but it, you can still get on that way because I still do because I just it's so easy to type in ISIS instead of whatever the long version is. But they have changed it.
And your password here at GN is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which is also very suspect.
Nobody can spell that.
That's right.
Nobody
that's why she's safe.
I guess.
All right. So we have things kind of started in Syria and Afghanistan right now.
Right. Well, things always going on in Afghanistan. You know, the last skirmish we had with the soldier who was killed from Peoria.
Yes.
You know, they were saying that remember at the time they said they had gotten such good intel information from that. And we'll see if this is part of that, if this is an ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, then he didn't die in vain to get some information to us to take care of this.
Exactly.
And in Syria, I heard something this morning, too, that there were some U.S. allies that were killed in the Tomahawk missile attack that happened in Syria. Yeah. I hadn't heard that information before today.
Wendy, there's so much information I have to go through every day that...
No, yeah, I know.
I know. No, but I'm just... It's crazy how much stuff we have to know. And by we, I mean all of us in America... to sift through and go, and there's so much going on right now. It's like, I can barely keep up.
Mm-hmm.
How many days has Donald Trump been in office?
I don't know.
So that's so, you know, I thought I heard someone in the newsroom say that this was planned for a couple of months, which made me reply, well, he was only inaugurated a couple of months ago.
Right.
So from day one. So, yeah, this may have been in the planning.
And I know that a lot of times Donald Trump would say, you know, why do you announce what you're going to do? Because then whoever the bad guys are, they're going to get out of the area. I agree to that. Mm-hmm. You know, to some extent, I agree with him on that. But it's just I don't want to be in a world where we're all at war with one another.
Right, right. You know, ISIS is, I think, a different breed, but... Yeah, there's a lot going on internationally and a lot of scary stuff. And, you know, North Korea, and we've got just so much stuff going on.
And with all this stuff going on, it seems, again, I'm not a military expert.
You're
nor
not?
Will I ever be.
Come on.
But, you know, it's like when it's spread out, when there are these conflicts happening everywhere else, it's like, don't you lose your focus sometime? It seems.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
I don't know. I just know that every morning when I wake up and get an alert from AP, I don't want to look at it.
I just want to make sure someone is focusing in Washington right now. I want everyone to focus.
Do you have a specific person that you want to be focused
maybe,
in Washington?
Maybe. Just please, someone be focusing on the important things.
All right.
So
I don't think you're asking a lot, Judy.
No, I don't think so either.
Although if this is successful and part of ISIS has been taken out, guess who's going to be praising... Everyone's going to be so happy with Donald Trump's decision.
You know what? Great. Better have been a good decision. I mean, I hope you don't drop a bomb that indiscriminately and hope that you did something that, you know, was valuable. So
it's not a video game.
No, it's not.
I know. And that's what it's.
I know. I know. All right. We must take a break.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Thank you, Judy, for all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure and an honor. That's Judy Pilak. We'll take a quick break. There's more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. On a happier note, if I may.
Please.
Did you hear about this kid? This is. I know Steve Cochran already has this Kid of the Week thing, but if we had Kid of the Week, I would give the award to this child in Ohio. He's 8 years old, who he found out his sister wanted McDonald's, so he drove her there.
See, first of all, I have to say that I am proud of the little kid taking care of his sister.
Sure, how could you not?
Sister. Because, you know, kids fight. This is like, you know, my second thought is the kid wanted McDonald's too.
whether he did or didn't, he's one of these guys who makes things happen. He saw a problem and said, hey, my sister's 4 years old and she's hungry. I'm eight. I must provide for her. Let's go to McDonald's. So hop in the car. We're going. At 8 p.m. on Sunday in East Palatine, Ohio, a dad is in bed after working all day. A mom is also exhausted and falling asleep on the couch. Even though they've had dinner earlier, the 8-year-old son and his 4-year-old sister are hungry. And what are they hungry for? That would be McDonald's.
What do they get? Are they getting a Happy Meal?
Oh, that's coming.
Okay.
That's coming. But instead of waking up his parents, the boy decides that this problem is one he can handle by himself. East Palestine police officer Jacob Keeler told Fox 8 News what happened next. The boy seated his sister in the back of the father's work van, not even a car. A car
could
be hard to navigate, but this was a van. Got in the back of the sister in the back of the father's work van before he got behind the wheel. He drove about a mile from his house through four intersections and over some railroad tracks. The trip required several right-hand turns and one left-handed turn.
The right-hand turns are much easier.
I would think so.
Because he's little, he can't see, you know.
Right, right.
I guess a left-hand turn would be easier for him. An 8-year-old in a van.
Any of its top. I mean, really, even if it was a straightaway, even if it was my house is here and McDonald's is right over there straightaway, it's just tough when you're an 8-year-old kid. Witnesses and other vehicles spotted the underage driver, and of course they called police. They reported that he obeyed the traffic rules. He stopped at red lights. He had adhered to the speed limit, and he didn't sideswipe a single garbage can.
Maybe I could get him to teach my 17-year-old son how to drive.
Do you know, I'll tell you more of the story, but when I was a little kid, when I was between the ages of 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, somewhere in there, I used to wake up in a cold sweat sometimes with the nightmare that all of a sudden I was behind the wheel of our family car, that my mom or my dad was in the passenger seat, my other parent and my brother were in the back seat, and for some reason that was never explained in the dream, I had to be the one driving the car. And when I was a little kid, when I was 4 or 5, I couldn't think of anything more horrific than that. That was the scariest thing in the world to me, being responsible for my own life and the lives of my family, driving a giant Thunderbird down the highway. I didn't want any part of that.
But now, all right, fast forward a little, and your dreams are over. You're not 4 years old.
Yeah.
Did you ever sneak out to drive the car?
You're
not going to admit this on the air.
This is interesting. When I was really little, and I think this is what led to that dream, we lived in an apartment, and my dad, when we would pull into the driveway of this apartment, if it was just my dad and I, he'd say, do you want to park the car? And he would sit me on his lap, and I would steer. His hands were near the steering wheel.
Right.
But I would steer the car through the parking lot and into the parking lot, and he would hit the brake and the gas.
How fun is that? It obviously gave you stress.
I think it did. Even though it was empowering to go, I'm
driving.
I'm driving a car.
But now I'm going to dream about it forever.
The cause and effect, even though it felt good to do that, the effect was, if my dad is crazy enough to let me do this in a parking lot, what's to say sometime on the Eisenhower it's not going to go, you know what, let's go all out on this one. Why don't you drive the rest of the way?
I was never one to want to drive before I could, because you didn't go to a Catholic high school, did you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because in a public high school, driver's ed was part of the program, and we had the driving simulators. Did you have those?
I don't think we had a driving simulator.
Those were so fun, although I don't know how much they help you. It's honestly like there's a steering wheel and then kind of a console that you look into, and you kind of steer, and as you turn right, the camera on the screen would kind of look like you were turning right. So it was really fun, but it was like a video game. I don't know how that transfers or translates to you actually being on the road and being in control of a car.
Did things jump out? Like, was there ever just like a cat running across a road?
I think they did. Yeah, because they'd test then if you hit the brake, like a kid would roll a ball out in front of you or something. And it was really fun. And then when I had behind the wheel, you'd do the simulators first.
Yeah.
And then behind the wheel, and it was always, and I'm sure at every high school, a lot of their athletic coaches were the ones who would take you out
almost
driving.
Almost always, for some reason. I don't know why it falls to the athletic coaches, but yeah, that's who ours were.
And there was a wrestling coach, which I'm not going to name his name, because he still lives around here, and I actually liked him very much, but he I don't like what he did when I was out driving. You're nervous, you know?
Sure,
you got other
course.
Kids in the car. Yeah. You don't want to make a mistake yeah. in front of the kids more than anything. And we were coming on an intersection, and he said, take a left at this light. So yeah. I put my turn signal on, and I'm ready to go. And as I'm pulling up to the light, I notice it says no left turn. And I, you know, I'm not shy. You know me, but yeah. I was out of my element a little bit. And he's like, what are you doing? And I said, well, you told me to turn left. And I said, yes, my turn signal's on. He goes, what does that sign say? I said, no left turn. And I said, yeah, but you told me. He goes, well, so if I told you to jump off a bridge, would you do it?
That's
tricky.
You. Yeah, that's not fair.
I'll tell you, though, it helped. I mean, I'm
more careful
yeah.
after that.
You know, something similar happened to me, but worse, actually. I was in driver's ed, and I had pulled into a driveway, and he wanted me to back up against traffic, so go across the near lane into the far lane. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm backing up, and as I'm starting to do it, I cut it, and he goes, okay, now stop. You cut it too late. So, you know, I go to shift back into drive, and as I go to shift, he said, no, keep going. I want to show you what happens. So I said, okay, and I hit the gas, and I went right into a mailbox.
He let you do that?
He told me to keep going, yeah.
What did he say then? Did he go, oops? Did he say that's what happened?
He didn't really address the mistake.
But his goal was to make you crash into a mailbox?
See, I think he didn't know the mailbox.
He didn't know it was there.
No, he couldn't, could he?
It's got to come out of his paycheck to get that car fixed.
But I still got an A, and I still did, like, you know, I didn't have to take the test at the DMV or anything, so.
Why didn't you have to take the test at the DMV?
Because if you do well in the course, like at school, a lot of times the instructors of the course can just do your test for you there.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I never had that happen. I had to...
Yeah, it seems like you should go through every part of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
No, but I was just able to walk up when I went to the DMV and hand them my voucher, and I was, you know...
You didn't have to do a behind-the-wheel test?
Not at the DMV, no.
Mm.
They don't do that anymore,
right? I don't know. He said...
I know you didn't.
Our driver's ed teacher would just, like, the whole hour that we were in the car, we were basically running errands for him. We'd go to the dry cleaner, we'd go to the bank.
Seriously?
We'd take him to pick up his... Yeah.
Yeah.
You did the same, right?
We were getting, like, cereal. We'd go to the Walmart and get cereal and then go to his kid's school.
Whatever he needed to get done that day, we just chauffeured him around.
Our wrestling coach did not have that happen. He just told us to go turn right on a one-way street. What? What are you doing?
Oh,
he
no.
didn't do any errands.
Oh,
we
it was
just...
all chauffeuring, and we had to call him Miss Daisy while we were driving around. Isn't that crazy? Why would... I don't know why we agreed to that. Whatever. Now, when my daughters took driver's ed, it was not part of the school. They had to go to a private place.
They didn't offer it at the school?
No, there's too many kids at Evanston High School, so they had to go. There's, you know, all these private driving schools. And the one that we chose, mostly because of its proximity, it was fairly close to us, told them that they didn't know how to parallel parking wasn't a necessity. Which I totally disagree on. I think you need to know how to parallel. But they go, it'll come up every once in a while, but it's not the kind of thing you'll have to worry about every day. Let's just pass over that. But I don't agree with that.
No,
I think that's one of the most important things to learn.
And Michael has 1 hour left. They offer it at the high school he goes to.
Yeah.
And I think, but you have to pay for it now. When we went to high school, it was part of the deal.
Yeah. Right.
So now I remember when your daughter started this, because again, I always forget you have two at the same time.
Yeah.
So that doubles everything.
Sure.
I think the school was like $400. But if you go to a private place, it was only like $450, mm-hmm. and you got more hours mm-hmm. behind the wheel. So
that's
I
true.
Went that way. And he has 1 hour left that I've been saving up, because they said give him some practice driving, and then we'll do that last hour and give him his certificate. Well, I got a note from the school saying that he can't graduate without that certificate.
They won't let him graduate?
No, isn't that nuts? Because it's a required class now, so it's not an elective. So he has to prove that he took it on his own. So it's just a certificate.
But some time has passed since he last took classes, and he would have to make up this additional hour. He'll remember everything he learned, right? There's nothing.
I don't know. Every time I pick him up from work and stuff, I say, why don't you drive home? I'm not ready.
Isn't that crazy?
I know.
Because almost every one of my friends, either on our 16th birthday or within a day or two later.
I hear you.
You went in for the test. You got tested. You're a driver.
I know. I wanted my license. And then I heard someone else at an event, another parent was saying, oh, just have him go take his test because my daughter, you know, was not, she didn't stop at the line. She didn't stay in line.
Yeah.
And the guy who was taking her on her driver's test at the state said, you know, I'm going to pass you. Just work on those things.
That doesn't seem right either.
I know. This whole thing is crazy.
I'll tell you, Wendy, as soon as the show's over, I'm marching to Jesse White's office, and I'm telling them that Kevin did not have his behind-the-wheel hours, and he might want to look into his file.
I had my hours. I
you did?
Yeah, but you're supposed to take it. You know, that prepares you for the Illinois test.
I kind of did it with my instructor, but he was also, like, a teacher at the high school. Is that me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but how does he get that clout?
I don't know.
I don't like it.
I think he felt bad for making me hit the mailbox, too. He's like, all right, you're good.
I think you're the only one who got the voucher, quite honestly.
Yeah, that's it.
Do they teach, like, how to change a tire in driver's ed?
No.
They did when I took it.
Did they?
But that needs to be on it also, because I know so many people that don't know how to do that.
I don't know how. I'd have to sell my car if I had a flat tire now.
I think they should just tell you to join AAA or some motor club, because here's how you dial the phone. Put it in your speed dial. That's how you change a tire.
It's so much easier. All right. As it turns out, we are out of time for today's show. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Now, you and I are not in tomorrow.
Don't we have a break to do? Wow.
No, we did a break already.
I'm
Remember, you gave me that signal, what do we do to get Judy Pylak out of here?
Oh,
and I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know. We could do a break.
That's right. Yes, we are off tomorrow.
Well deserved.
Not really.
Not so much, though.
Although, look at coming from a guy who worked one day at the New Year and then took a week off.
That's the best way to do it.
You've made it. It's been a long streak for you now.
I know. I know.
Rick Kogan will be sitting in our chairs tomorrow, and we'll be back on Monday. So have a happy Easter, everybody.
Oh, I get it because of the Easter Bunny.
Or a lovely Passover. I don't know
you
what
don't
to say.
You have an animal that you can...
No.
All right. That's it, everybody. Stay tuned for Nothing, which is next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.